coming off what I believe to be his most complete game of the season, I bring a guest on to talk with us about Jaden Ivey's rookie season and how it's looked this far and how it can get better for the rest of the year in today's episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Per usual, I'm your host, Kuka Hill. You can find me over on Twitter, at Kuka Hill. I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons, hit that subscribe button, or leave us a five-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. That's another great way to support the podcast. And today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. So the last podcast we spoke about Jaden Ivey's previous game against the Minnesota Timberwolves, and where I thought this was the most complete game I had seen from him all year. Jaden Ivey's been a hot topic over the last week or so. We've talked about him quite a bit, and we're going to continue that discussion with a guest today. One of my friends and a very, very, very good Twitter follower. Breaks down a ton of clips from games on Twitter. He does a lot of scouting of college prospects, G League prospects, etc. in the offseason. There's an overall great Twitter follow. I respect the hell out of him. Hal Bridius is his Twitter at, but you can obviously just call him Hal. Hal, appreciate you coming on, man. It's been a minute, but I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for the very generous intro there.
No, yeah. And he's also the host of the Busted Header podcast. You guys can check that out, even though I believe you said you guys are on a little bit of a hiatus lately.
my co-host is traveling pretty much all the time. And, as you know, the Pistons have not exactly been that fun to talk about. So.
Right. No,
we can't let it linger for now.
That doesn't stop Locked On Pistons from giving you guys that daily content every single day.
No, you power through.
All right, let's talk about Jaden Ivey. I've obviously talked about, like I said a little bit earlier, I've talked about him a lot this week and how I think you're aware, too, that he's been a little bit of a hot topic in the Pistons community over the last few weeks. I think a lot more negativity was starting to come in about him. I think once Cade went down, as they started to play more without Cade, some of his weaknesses started to get, shown a little bit more. But let me ask you this to start this off. I thought this past game he played was the most complete game he's played. I thought he played with incredible pace. I thought he made some really good passes. It wasn't his highest scoring game. It wasn't like his, flashiest game. But I actually thought that's what made it so good, in my opinion. There's a lot of times he, off a make. Usually he would take the ball off a make and just go straight 1-on-5. And then, he'll miss and then he'll be on the ground. And now the Pistons are on a 5-on-4. There was a few situations where he went to the rim, tried to do something like, or looked like he was about to go to the rim, but then pulled it back out to run an offense, slowed down. I thought he just played really under control. And I thought it was one of the better games, if not the best game he's played all year. What did you think of this past game that he played against the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Yeah, I think we've seen him start to learn lessons, right? You go back, I think the most obvious thing is his mid-range stuff. You go back to the first few games of the season or in college, and he'd go up for like a floater or something and be like bicycling in midair, right? His legs were just flying everywhere. And now we see him, coming off these screens where he's taken just like one step inside the arc, which, maybe is not the best shot, but he's taken one step inside. He's cutting two spaces now instead of just like through them, right? Because before it'd just be like, oh, I'm moving at light speed through this space. I guess I'm open. I got to like take a floater. And he had no control over anything, right? He was just reacting. And he's now seeing these spaces open up for him and stopping in the space under control, taking these nice mid-range jump shots. And I think that's a good encapsulation of like the growth we've seen from him over the season, because he's still struggling with a lot of things. But I think more than anything, we're starting to see him kind of find a role and find out where his comfort spots are. And I think actually the last couple games he played without Killian, when Killian was out with his suspension, I think that probably taught Ivy what he didn't know. He really struggled to be the point guard in those games. That clearly did not work for him yet. And I think we've seen since then like he's kind of retreated into a much simpler role, and I think he's thrived because of it.
Yeah, and look, over the last 17 games, he's shooting 41% from deep. Now, it's not unlike some insane volume. It's only on 3.0 attempts a game. But he's making those shots. He's making them when he's open. He's making them when he needs to. I think already through 45 games into his rookie season, has it been rocky at times? Yes. Has he had some downs? Yes. Has it been the most perfect rookie year? No, it hasn't. And most rookies don't have a perfect rookie year. But like you said, I think recently you start to see him grow in some areas, start to, and again, I pointed this out on the podcast when Killian got suspended. I said this, one of the things I was really looking forward to watching was Jane Ivey with more ball handling responsibilities. I don't think it necessarily went well, but like you said, it gave him that kind of experience and let him see the game from a different perspective. And yeah, I think since Killian's come back, and really over the last 17 games, he shot the ball well. But yeah, over the last few games, I really feel like he's just moving at the right pace. You're starting to see him slow down a little bit more, knowing when to use his athleticism to his advantage and knowing when he needs to slow down and just run the offense. Even this past game, I don't think he was like great or anything, but I thought he was better defensively this past game against the Timberwolves as well. A little bit more in the first half, I'd say. But I thought he had one of his best games of the year this past game against the Timberwolves. But he's trending in the right direction. Obviously, we brought up how well he's shooting from outside. You brought up the fact that he's becoming more comfortable with the mid-range shot. Obviously, he's always going to be electric going to the basket, drawing fouls, even though I'd like to see him make the free throws a little bit more. He's shooting around 70% right now, which is a little bit shocking to me. But what areas for you, Hal? Because, look, this past offseason was the first time I ever tried to dive into, like, draft stuff. And I believe you were on the podcast quite a few times to help me through that. You've been doing it for a minute. You obviously scouted Jane Ivey, and now you get to see him through the first 45 games in a Pistons uniform. What do you see from him so far that you think that you want to see him improve on the most for the rest of this season? Not just through his career, but just since, because, you know, there's a lot of things you can pick for the rest of his career. But if you had to pick just for the next, was it 47 games? No, 37 games? 37 games they have left? What would you like to see him improve the most on?
I think overall, you just want to keep seeing the same steps being taken. The game, like, he is visibly seeing the game slow down for him. And I think we just want to see that continue. And I think the next, like, level of progression for that for him is to not only make the mid-range shots, but also the passes in the mid-range, right? To start, because he has been really good making kickouts, like, from the deep paint underneath the rim, you know, finding corner shooters, etc. But it's still like if he gets like caught by a drop big, right, like a Brook Lopez, he tends to still be kind of scrambled if he gets like one step too far, and he doesn't make those passes as much. He's looking for bailouts then. He's not really reading things, and those I think are the next step that hopefully we can see a little more of going into the end of the season. It's that and just more defensive maturity for me.
Fair enough. I would love to see him get a little bit better defensively, even though, I mean, he's a rookie. I don't know how much better it'll get in his rookie season. So the thing that I'd love to see him improve on for the rest of this season, if I had to pick one thing, it would just continue to be to see him continue to get comfortable with changing speeds and playing with pace. That's the thing I feel like guys of his archetype struggle with most. When you're just such a freak athlete like that, you constantly want to use that all the time. And I think he's already started to show that he's learning a little bit that you can't do that all the time. You can't just rely on that every single time you have the ball, whatever. And again, like I said, last game, I thought he did a really good job of it. I'd like to see him continue to show a little bit progression each game. I don't expect him to be perfect every game, but much like I said at the beginning of the year with Killian Hayes, I've used this example a lot. At the beginning of the year, I used to say all the time, as long as Killian comes out and plays the exact same way, aggressively the same way, no matter if he has a bad game, he'll eventually start to consistently have good games if he plays the same way, whether he's bad or good within that same game. And it's the same thing with Jane Ivey. Whether he's struggling that game, whether he's playing really well that game, as long as he plays that exact same way, plays with the same pace, and knows how to slow down, etc., you'll start to see that improvement more often and more often. So that's the one place I'd like to see him continue to improve on the rest of the year. I think we've already seen some of it so far through 45 games. When we come back, though, I'm gonna throw a little bit of a wrench into this. We were going to talk about some trade rumors, but I'm gonna skip that. We're gonna go over some other players that we've seen this year improve in Isaiah Stewart and Killian Hayes with Hal. And then also maybe some players that have taken a little bit of a step back in Sadiq Bey, or maybe at the moment. I don't know if Hal will say he took a step back. Maybe he just stayed the same. I don't know.
You try to get me canceled again.
we'll find out what Hal's answer to that one is when we come back. But first, I got to tell you guys about one of our sponsors, LinkedIn Jobs. As a small business owner or hiring manager, you know that success in 2023 all depends on the team members you surround yourself with. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can hire qualified candidates with more efficiency by matching open roles with people who have the skills, values, and experiences to help you achieve your goals. LinkedIn Jobs helps you quickly attract qualified candidates to your open jobs with targeting tools. They go beyond resume data by using insights from your job post, company, and their 875 million member profiles to put your post in front of the most qualified candidates. Identify the most qualified candidates on LinkedIn Jobs and connect with them fast and for free. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to screen and rate applicants based on your job qualifications all on one platform. What's a better way to enter into the new year by finding the right person for your small business? It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find qualified candidates you want to talk to faster and for free. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonmba. That's linkedin.com/lockedonmba to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that is linkedin.com/lockedonmba to post your job for free. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons, hit that subscribe button, or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. That's another great way to support the podcast. So like I said, we were going to initially, before the podcast, I told Hal that we were going to talk about trade rumors in this second segment. But I thought it wouldn't make much sense to go from talking about improvement of a young player, then go to trade rumors, then go right back to talking about improvement of young players, etc. So I thought we'd just continue that going. And then in the final segment, we'll talk about some new, well, not necessarily new, but just some repeated reporting about some trade rumors going on with Bojan Bogdanović and Alec Burks. So stay tuned for that a little bit later on. But Hal, so I'm not going to start with Killian Hayes. I'm going to start with Isaiah Stewart, because Killian Hayes has dominated this podcast a lot, I think, as you probably would guess. I've talked about Killian a lot. I've tried to talk about a lot of players. I feel like I've done a good job balancing this out. But obviously, me as a Killian guy, obviously you're a Killian guy. When he started playing well, I obviously talked about him a lot. But Isaiah Stewart is another player I've tried to give a lot of credit to, because before the season, I did not believe in him as a power forward. I also wasn't the biggest believer that he'd go from having such low volume from beyond the arc and such low small evidence that he could be an outside shooter through his NBA career and immediately become a really good outside shooter. Now, over the last few games, it's dropped a little bit. I know he's out right now with a shoulder injury. Over the last few games, he hadn't hit as many threes. I believe, actually, over the last seven games, he shot 20% from deep. So that's tough to see. But before then, he was shooting around 38% on the year from deep. I don't want to say that this recent trend is what he really is. I think he's just going through a little bit of a slump. We'll see what it is when he eventually comes back. But overall, even if you just take away the three-point shooting, you think it's going to fall down to like 33, 34%, somewhere around there. I think you've seen a lot of improvement from Isaiah Stewart in multiple areas. I've talked about it a lot, so I want to kind of get your thoughts before I continue with mine. What have your thoughts been overall in Isaiah Stewart's season thus far for the Pistons, and do you believe he actually has improved drastically this year?
Well, so I got to start by saying I was one of the skeptics, right? Draft night, I was a skeptic. So I got to say, you know, anytime I talk about Isaiah, that like I was wrong. He proved me wrong, and I'm always really impressed by it, because I didn't think he had the mobility he had defensively. And he's proven me wrong there. I mean, I've been really impressed with what he is defensively. I always thought the shot was one thing I was pretty confident would come around. I didn't think it was going to be there right away. But like, I like the shot. I really like the way the mechanics have smoothed out this year. I buy that being a thing long-term. I don't know. I think that to be like a shooter and to see all the full effects of it, like you basically have to have a year or more of, you know, of reasonable shooting on reasonable volume to get there, right? Think about like someone like Grant Williams on the Celtics, right? He was a great corner shooter for like quite a while, right? On a pretty reasonable volume before people started treating him like that. And it basically took him being one of the best like efficiency guys from three in the league to really start having gravity that kind of made the offense work. And so I think we still have to kind of wait on Stewart to just basically keep building the resume. And I expect, you know, some cold streaks and some hot streaks to be part of that. The thing that has really kind of surprised me is he's also starting to take those steps, you know, putting the ball on the floor just a little bit. It always looks a little awkward, and it's not always like the most like planned and precise thing, but like, I didn't think he really had any of that. So the fact that he's A, driving at all, and B, making like some reasonable plays out of it is a really huge step. We haven't seen it as much since Cade went out, but he was really showing that like really aggressive finishing around the rim this year, especially when Cade was giving him those pocket passes where he was just going up right away to the rim and getting the ball in the rim and getting those free throws. I do think that those are things that we weren't seeing before that we're seeing now that are really big steps for him. And I'm really happy to see, because he is so easy to root for.
Yeah, and I've talked about, obviously, like I said, I mean, Hal knows this is a daily podcast. I have to talk about the Pistons every single day. So obviously we've talked about Isaiah Stewart a little bit on here. I'd hope you guys would at least classify it as a little bit. But look, I'm not going to just echo everything you said. I want to take it into a little bit of a different route. Some other things that have impressed me with Stu this year is, one, I think playing at the four position and being able to, you know, I don't know if it was a space floor or playing around the perimeter more, so he gets more of some momentum going downhill. But I feel like we've seen more athleticism from him in transition. We've seen him be a little bit more athletic in the half court coming off of 1 foot. We've seen a lot, I think, like over the last few games before he got hurt with his shoulder, we see him explode a few times off of 1 foot, some really good finishes. I believe he's had like two posters over the last few weeks. So I feel like we've seen a little bit more of an athlete unlocked off of 1 foot. I actually, off 1 foot, he looks like a better athlete than he has off 2 feet, in my opinion. So we've seen that unlocked a little bit. I liked how he's moved around the perimeter on kickouts. There's a few times where he can get a little better with it. But there have been a few kickouts, specifically from Killian, where Killian will drive baseline and Stu will move around the perimeter really well to try to give him an outlet to dish it off to. I've liked that as well. And obviously the three-point shooting, again, over the last 7 games, it dipped a little bit. But for the most part this year, I thought he's played really well. I think moving to the four and being able to play with Jalen Duren has masked some of his deficiencies around the rim, which is really, really good for him. But definitely, I think there's two players who have really, really, really stuck out this year and have really tried to cement themselves, at least a part of next year's roster and part of this young core. And Stu's at the very top of that list. He's one of them. The other player that is Killian Hayes. And Killian Hayes, after the first 11 games, was shooting 20% from the floor, 16% from deep. It was one of the worst starts I've ever seen someone have in their entire careers. Now, since then, he's shooting 43% from the field, 35% from deep, 83% from the free throw line. He's averaging around 13 and 7. He's played really well. He's had really big games. He just had a really good game against the Timberwolves. Him and Jaden Ivey, for the first time, I think, had a really good distribution game, my goodness, and scoring game within the same game by both of them. Real quickly, Hal, I know, you know, I think we're running up against it a little bit, because I want to get to Sadiq too before we move on. Just what have you thought about Killian? I know you're a big believer in Killian Hayes. I know you were big on him before the year, or before the Pistons even drafted him. Just how have you felt about his progress this year? And is there anything actually specifically that you've seen just drastically change from, you know, that first 10 games to what he's been since then?
So, A, I'm super excited. You know, I have always loved Killian's game, and I love that it's starting to come together. I think there's been maybe two things that we've seen improve for him. The feet are just so much cleaner, basically every time he shoots. And you can really tell when the shot is not going to fall because it just gets messy and you can see it right away. You know, like was it 2 games ago where he had a really rough night against the Sixers, I think it was. And, you know, you saw it break down, the feet just kind of fell apart and he was pushing, the floaters were short, everything was short. And then he comes back and he has a great game again. You know, the mid-range shot looks comfortable for him. He's finding these comfort areas. And it's just those cleaner feet and the confidence he's finding, you know, because of it has just unlocked so much for him. Not just from a, like the way defenses are playing him or anything, but from just the confidence to just go out and try things again is really fun. Cause that was what we saw pre-draft was a guy like a cocky kid, right? Somebody who wanted to kind of sauce on people. But the other thing is, I think we're starting to see some developments in his handle where he had some issues early on where, you know, he'd go for a crossover and like, he wouldn't drive off his foot at the right time of the dribble move. And so he looked slow in a way that like, he's a better athlete than I think he's looked. And it's always been because he can't chain the handle and his own like body movement together very well. And I think we're starting to see some of that creep in. And we saw, you know, in this last game, we saw a couple finishes, right, where he finally gets around his man and gets those scoop shots at the rim. And I know you were happy to see those. And I looked at those and I was like, wow, the big thing that stands out here is his first step looks way better in a couple of these clips than it has basically ever looked before. And that's the thing that I think I've been really most surprised by, most excited by, and maybe most intrigued by moving forwards is kind of how he can use that to unlock more and maybe get some rim pressure added to his game.
Yeah, and if he can add that rim pressure to his game, start scoring around the rim, you're going to have a legit three-level score at that point with defense, with playmaking. That will be scary. That will be some scary hours if you can add that. Hopefully this past offseason added that shooting, fixed up some of that footwork, changed his jump shot. Now hopefully maybe this next offseason he improves around the rim. But Isaiah Stewart, Killian Hayes, the two biggest guys that weren't on the were on the roster previous seasons that I feel like have really, really stuck out this year so far in development standpoint. And I'm really happy for those two guys. When we come back, obviously we're going to get to the trade rumors. I want to get Hal's thoughts on that. But to start off the next segment, I want to talk to him about a guy that I think a lot of people feel like has not taken that step forward and has taken a few steps back. And that's Sadiq Bey. So stay tuned for that. We'll talk about that when we get back. But first, I got to tell you guys about one of our sponsors, BetOnline.net. BetOnline.net is your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there. From pro football to college bowl season to basketball, we've got it all at the BetOnline.net. If you love sports podcasts, you can even find those at BetOnline.net as well. We're always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about their trends in action today. And if you head over to BetOnline.net and you click on that basketball tab, you'll see they have the favorites for MVP, Sixth Man of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, team that has the best odds to win the championship, team who will have the worst odds in the league to, you know, finish last in the league. And also, the NFL playoffs are rolling around. You want to take a chance in the Super Wild Card weekend. They have the favorites for those games. I'd recommend you take advantage of those games. I think three of them would be gimmies with those backup quarterbacks. But that's what I look at over at BetOnline.net. You can find all of that at BetOnline.net. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about their trends in action today. BetOnline, where the game starts. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons, hit that subscribe button, or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. That's another great way to support the podcast. I'm going to shout out Locked On real quick. I'm sure some of you guys on the YouTube who are watching, you guys can see they shipped me a little hat. You know, I mess with it. It's a snapback. You know, you guys know I collect them snapbacks. So I mess with it a little bit. You feel me? I had to represent it here. So thank you to Locked On for sending that for me. All free, completely free, Hal. This gave me a free hat.
How many appearances before I get a hat? Just curious.
I don't know, man. It took me about 2 years of appearances before they got me this. So you're a little bit behind. Anyway, let's go ahead and get into Sadiq Bey. So we just got done talking with about Jaden Ivey and how his rookie season has went. We're happy with his development so far, how he's looked from day one to now. I'm sure we didn't talk about him, but I'm sure you feel pretty good about Jalen Duren and what we've seen already at his.
Love him.
Yeah, how good he's looked already as the youngest player in the NBA. I think he's a little bit farther than any of us could have imagined at this point already. Still has some parts he has to work on, obviously. He's very raw, but I don't think any of us expect him to be already at this point. Those are the positives, and obviously we just talked about Killian Hayes, Isaiah Stewart. Those are the positives, I feel like. I feel like those are the biggest positives from this year. I feel like one of the biggest negatives so far from this year for Pistons fans has been Sadiq Bey. I'm not going to say nothing, Hal, because I've already said enough about this, and if I keep talking about it, I might get hit with some. Actually, you know what? I'm starting to see Pistons fans turn on Sadiq Bey. You want me to be honest? I've seen some Pistons fans start to give up on him. I've seen some Pistons fans start to become a little bit more critical of him than they were in the past. And I think it's warranted. Just where are you at with Sadiq this year? Obviously, I feel like a lot of Pistons, I mean, we remember it, rookie year, people were calling him I never agreed with any of this, by the way, but we were being told he was the next PG-13 from Pistons fans. We were being told he was the next Chris Middleton. We were told that, you know, a lot of Pistons fans thought he was going to be better than Desmond Bain, and Desmond Bain has went, phew, and Sadiq has went, pfft. So, yes, those sound effects I created. But what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on Sadiq so far this year? And what do you think is causing his struggles? And are you as low on these struggles as it seems like a lot of people are right now?
I think the biggest thing is it's become a lot harder to figure out Sadiq. A lot of stuff hasn't changed for him, right? Defensively, he's basically the same. You look at a lot of like his advanced stats, and like the rebound percentages are pretty consistent. Steal percent, block percent, turnover percent, usage percent. A lot of this stuff is very consistent. One of the big things we saw last year that I think both you and I were encouraged by, he was assisting a lot more. He went up to about a 14% assist percent after a 7.5% rookie year. He's back down in the 7%. That's a concern to me, right? A big question for me whenever I'm looking at prospects, whenever I'm looking at players, Sadiq is still scoring, right? How do you take that scoring and how do you translate that into something better for your team? And the problem is he just isn't able to take these possessions and turn them into something better. He's drawing a lot of free throws, which has been his saving grace this year, because his 2-point like scoring percentage hasn't taken any kind of amazing leap. I just had it pulled up here just for reference. So he went from a 45% from the floor, from 2-point range, excuse me, last year. He's up to almost 47%. So, you know, not a huge leap, but the free throw rate is really spiking. So that's really good. He is at least finding some new tools inside the arc. But then, okay, you're getting trapped by three people and you're preying on a free throw because you aren't seeing the pass and you're not seeing it early, right? That's a concern. The defense is a concern. And then, you know, the percentage of his three-pointers from the corners, right? It's gone up every year, actually. He's almost 30% of his attempted three-pointers are in the corners now. And yet his three-point percentage is dropping because he's completely lost it from above the arc. You got to start figuring out now what is Sadiq, because 2 years ago it was like, okay, this is a 3-point shooting wing I can count on, and you know, in theory he'll mature as a defender, and like, okay, I can plug that into any lineup, you know, there's a super flexible future ahead of him. And now we're starting to see a player get more and more constrained into, okay, he's only a play finisher, you can't really run stuff through him as much. You can't count on him to just kind of bridge gaps defensively. And so now you have to start asking like a lot more questions about like what kind of lineup construction is there around Sadiq. And I think that's just been the hardest thing, is you look at someone like Alec Burks, where like great shooting, you know, not necessarily any worse defensively than what Sadiq has given you. And just like the better shooting and slightly better playmaking from Burks, it's just like way easier to picture in a whole bunch of lineups. And you know, so now I think as people are looking for like, all right, what's the next step for this team, right? How do you make this team better? Who can you trade? you know, what kind of contracts need to be on the move. I think Sadiq starts to become an option that people are willing to consider a little bit more because he isn't showing, you know, the kind of tools that you need to consider when you're building something bigger. You know, he's no longer just kind of being gifted this assumed upward projection, especially because he's a little bit older. He's, I think, closer to 25 now. 24, sorry, excuse me. He's a late, an older 23-year-old, so almost 24.
So as everything you said, I completely agree with, specifically the part about it's harder to envision. I'm going to take it a different route. It's hard for me to envision how Sadiq contributes to winning. What role is he going to play on a winning team? Because I've talked about this a lot on the podcast, that this is a wing league. I feel like it's really always been, you know, Michael Jordan, Kobe, LeBron. Like, I mean, obviously you have some Hakeem, Tim Duncan, like the big guys and stuff, but I feel like it really has always been dominated by wings. Specifically, even more now, switchable wings that can play 1, 2, 3, 4. Some can even go 5 and switch across. Like, it's really wing dependent. And if you're a wing in this league that is not some explosive athlete, you're also not a good defender, and now your 3-point percent is also dropping, and you're basically just a wing that can't provide any of that, but you can draw some free throws, and you can soak up some possessions trying to get some free throws. How much is that? Are you really helping us contribute to winning? How are you helping us win? Because it's not like Sadiq, and I this is a loose example, and then we'll move into some of the trade rumors. But a loose example that I use, it's not a good one at all. Hal's probably gonna make a face, but I think he'll get like what my point is at the end of it. I've said in the podcast, like, for example, DeMar DeRozan, if he has the ball in his hands a lot, you're okay with it. Because he draws a ton of free throws. He's an elite finisher around the rim. He's an elite shot maker, and he's a pretty damn good playmaker. So if he's going to have the ball in his hands all the time and not be a very good defender and play on the wing spot, not take many three or be a great three-point shooter, you live with that because he's so elite at all the other stuff. Sadiq's not that. If you're not elite to the point where I'm saying I feel comfortable taking the ball out of Cade Cunningham's hands so you can have the ball, or I feel comfortable taking the ball out of Jaden Ivey's hands so you can have the ball, or whoever the top pick this year, I'm going to take the ball out their hands so you can have the ball. If I don't feel confident with myself doing that, and you can't provide defense, and you're not providing outside shooting, which is providing spacing for those players I just mentioned, at the position he's at, it's getting harder and harder for me to see what exactly he's going to be contributing to winning when the Pistons are trying to win. And I think that's why you're starting to see some rumors leak out, and why you're starting to see some stuff leak out about the Pistons being maybe not shopping him, but definitely not turning it away anymore. Like you may have thought in years past, now they're more open to hearing what he could possibly get for them. And I think that right there is the biggest reason why. Obviously he's taking some steps back, but I think 3 years in, you can see where Killian can fit on a winning team, what he helps you with. You see what Isaiah Stewart can help you with, what his role can be, what he's going to contribute. You can see that obviously with Kay Cunningham. You can already see that, I think, with Jane Ivey, Jalen Duren. Like, you can see those roles and how they do it. I think Sadiq's the only one of the young core where you really look at and you're like, I don't know what he does. I don't know what he's going to do for us when we want to win. I don't know how he helps. I think that's the biggest concern there. Is there any final thoughts you want to chime in to respond to that before we touch a little bit on the trade rumors?
Just that I no longer really look at roster construction as like point guard, shooting guard, small forward, you know, positional anymore. It's just, what are your skills, right? I need a certain amount of each skill on my roster, right? I need a certain amount of rebounding, a certain amount of rim protection, wing defense, you know, 3-point shooting, playmaking. I need to reach a certain level in each of these categories. And of course, your team style changes how much you need. And you start to ask a question, all right, Sadiq adds, you know, a little bit of 3-point shooting and some, you know, self-generated scoring, but what's he adding in these other columns? And, you know, you just start having to say, okay, you know, he's not actually adding value here, you know, around these other columns. What does that do, you know, for how we win? You know, what if I can add another wing that just gives me a little bit of shooting but gives me something else, it's just better for the team. And so either Sadiq's got to figure that out, or the team is going to have to start looking at some other solutions.
All right, so we're going to move past that real quick. And I want to touch on, I know we're at 34 minutes, but we have a guest. You guys know when we have guests on, we run a little bit longer. It is what
it's always
is.
My fault.
But, all right, so we got some trade rumors. Obviously, with Bojan Bogdanović and Alec Burks. A lot of the reporting I've seen is from Jake Fisher, though we have seen some of it from other people. But the majority of it I've seen is from Jake Fisher. How we're at a point where we've heard that if the Pistons are going to move Bojan or Alec Burks, it's going to take a tremendous return. And we've heard that Bojan's asking price is a unprotected first and a young guy. We've heard that it's unprotected first and just some kind of, you know, filler that's not long salary or whatever. Alec Burks, they say it has to be tremendous return. I don't know what that would mean. I'm assuming that would mean at least a first round pick. I'm assuming that's what tremendous means. If you had to predict right now, do you think either of those guys are traded at the deadline?
It wouldn't surprise me, certainly. I think most of what we're hearing is posturing. I just think it's all, you know, posturing. But I do think there is something to the idea that, like, we're no longer just trying to flip assets, right? I don't think Troy Weaver is just trying to kick the can of the rebuild down the road anymore. I think 2 years ago, Bogey's not on this team anymore. Like, I think he's already gone. I think now they're saying, you know what, he's given us something, and we want to make sure that whatever we get out of Bogey, you know, makes the team better. Isn't just a chance to make the team better down the road, right? Isn't just, you know, the 18th, 22nd pick down the road, you know, some guy that's going to be a gamble. I think they're looking at, you know, combining assets now and saying, okay, can we get a better wing than Bogey? You know, can we get a pick? You know, they want unprotected picks because it takes legitimately good picks to make that value, right? This is an asset finally that the Pistons have that is good, is helping them win. I don't think that they can afford even to just turn it into like two, even like if it's like two firsts, but it's like two firsts that you expect to be like 25th in a year or two down the road. You know, they do need to start saying, okay, Cade Cunningham, year two, year three, you know, the rest of these young guys are no longer just rookies anymore. Even though you've got Ivy and you know, this year's upcoming rookie, even though they'll be kids, your young guys are pretty soon not going to be young guys anymore. So you can't keep getting guys that are, you know, picks in 2027 anymore. It's not a thing. So I think they're starting to put some pressure out and say, hey, you got to give us, you know, something we can act on immediately. And I think it's the right move for them to do.
So I have a question and then we'll wrap up the podcast. I think I've said this a lot on the podcast. I've been probably one of the biggest champions of this. I just want to see where you're at with it. If you disagree with me or if you agree, etc. So like I heard you say 2027. So let's say Lakers offer 27-29 for Bojan. It's down the road. A lot of people are like, oh, why do we need 11-year-olds? Why do we need 12-year-olds? It's not going to help us, blah, blah. Or any kind of unprotected first-round pick. That's not great. That's not like going to be, you know, for a fact, it's going to be a lottery pick kind of thing. My biggest thing has been the Pistons do not have a first round pick they can really play with. It's owed to I believe New York owns it right now.
Yep, the Isaiah Stewart pick and all its protections. Yeah,
right. So they don't have a first round pick to play with, which means you can't. In order to go after guys in trade markets, you have to have that kind of flexibility. You have to be able to trade those kind of assets. And the Pistons, I feel like, aren't even they're incapable of being players in that kind of market. If they want to go get a wing, I think that they do. I think this offseason you're going to see some moves and they want to try to build this team as a winner. So if Bojan can get you a first or two first that maybe are late round picks, even still, I've been a big champion of doing it because at least you have that now to attach to, I don't like Sadiq and someone else. You can now attach assets to players to then go after a player who becomes available. Right now, I don't think they even have that kind of flexibility to do that. And I think Bojan is the only one that's going to give them that type of flexibility to be able to do that, which is why I've been in the camp that you really do need to try and move him by this deadline. So this offseason, you can go after a guy who gives you a little bit more defensively, is a little bit more capable on both ends. Because if they go into next year, like with Sadiq and Bojan as your wing still, you're not winning any more games. It's not going to happen. Your defense, you're going to have the worst wing defensive rotation again. And you're just not going to go nowhere. So that's why I'm at. If you hold on to them, I don't believe that it makes you better. I think you're still going to be bad. I think you have to find wings that are going to play defense and give you something on the other end, but mostly be able to play both sides of the floor. And I think there's going to be some guys that will open up possibly in the offseason. And I'd like the Pistons to be able to at least play for them. And I don't think they can right now because they don't have the assets to. I think Bojan can get those. What are your quick thoughts to that reasoning?
So I think it's more like I still expect Bojan. I don't expect Bojan to like finish his contract here, right? If he's still here for the rest of the season, I still expect like this summer to get a lot of traction, right? I think he's a good salary and a good enough piece that you might be able to open, you know, conversations for like OG Anunoby trades, which would require a lot more than just Bogey. But like, I think that's still, you know, if you think you can add him and, you know, maybe a future pick, or maybe, you know, maybe it's Sadiq Bey or Killian Hayes or one of the other young kids, and you go out and you get, you know, one of the dudes that might end up on the market, I think that's a possibility they need to be cautious of. I do think the Lakers picks you bring up, two things about those. One, I think those are way more valuable than just a random pick. You know, I do think those are picks that people expect to be, you know, pretty bad in, you know, especially by 2029. I don't think people expect the Lakers to be good then. And that's not just good for the Pistons, but like those have resale value. For a lot of teams, you get a 2027, a 2029 pick. Most people aren't going to predict that they're going to be lottery picks at that point, especially if you're getting them from a presumed contender, you know, that people are going to expect those to be, you know, mediocre. The Lakers are kind of a special case. The other part about the Lakers is we haven't heard, at least I haven't heard a lot of like plausible trade rumors for who wants to get Bogey, right? It's like, everybody's just like, well, you know, they could go out and get Bogdanovich, but no, I haven't heard like concrete stuff. Like these people offered something. And I think it's mostly because everybody knows that the Lakers still need pieces and they just dominate, you know, the media market especially. But also I think the league is kind of waiting to see which shoe falls. And so I think part of it is just, it's hard to know what his value is and what they might trade him for, because we're all kind of stuck on what the Lakers set the market at if they end up trading those picks.
That makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't doubt that at all. All right, guys, we're at 42 minutes. We're going to go ahead and wrap that up there. Just a quick yes or no question, Hal. No further. You don't need to give a full explanation. Just give a quick yes or no. If you had to predict, would Sadiq Bey be on this roster at the start of next season?
Yes.
Okay. We'll leave it there. All right, Hal, thank you for coming on, man. I appreciate it. It's been a while.
Thank you.
But it's always a lot of fun to have you on, man. You can go find Hal over on Twitter at Hal Bridius. Like I said, an amazing follow. Breaks down clips every game, it feels like. Breaking down film, scouting prospects, giving you analysis. I really do respect the hell out of Hal and his opinion and what he does. So I wouldn't be suggesting him as a follow. Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't be suggesting him as a follow if I didn't feel that way. I definitely wouldn't be having him on the podcast either if I didn't feel that way. So definitely go check him out. I appreciate you guys tuning in to Locked On Pistons, making it your first listen of every single day. We're free and available on all your podcast platforms. Hit that subscribe button at the YouTube channel. Leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. And until the next one, I'll see you guys later. Go Pistons, and peace out.